conference record has joined the conference.
All right, Jason, you still there?
All right, yes. What program are you using for that?
You know, I'm not actually, it's called Conference Record. It was, our editor, okay. Mike, works for a company recently, and he just still uses the info. But it's nice. It records it all and sends an MP3 straight to your email afterwards. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because it's great that you can just do it through your phone, or did you have to call a website first, something like that?
Yeah, so basically I get on my phone, I call the number, and then do a couple of random, type in a bunch of conference code numbers and blah, blah, blah. And,
okay.
And then, yeah, it just brings us in like we are now and records the whole thing. And unfortunately, It doesn't transcribe it for me, but, you know.
Dang it! Those bastards. Yeah. But there's got to be something else for that. What? Okay, I'm just wondering, because I get in these things where people want me to call in, like, a Google number or something like that.
Oh, right.
Or, you know, all these sort of other things to do, or they're like, oh, let me get my recorder ready, or they're like, I wish I recorded, I just have my phone, you know, I can't record through their phone. But anyways, so I'll take it out probably.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, it's great. It's made life really easy, and there is an option that we could have given you, you know, like all the numbers to call, and it would be the same thing, but I figure, you know, a little less for you to do, the better.
Yay, good thinking.
So anyway, like I said, my name is John Shum with The Grateful Web, and here today with Jason. Is it pronounced Han or Han?
It's pronounced Han.
Han, okay, great. So Jason Han of Eodo and the String Cheese Incident. Eodo, you and Travis are kicking off the Outer Orbit Tour here in a few days, and that kind of bounces around through November. How are you doing? What's going on? And what's new these days?
Everything's going well. Getting super excited for the tour to start this week. And it's kind of one of those things where it's not like, we haven't been playing. We did Infrasound up near Minneapolis this past weekend. And before that was like basically 3 weeks of String Cheese World during those festivals. Mm-hmm. And before that it was a mix of Eodo and String Cheese. So really since about May it's been nonstop. I think we had one weekend off. So even though it's like, you know, tour starting a run of playing venues, it's been go all the way. Hasn't been a whole lot of downtime, which is good. That's great because all these weeks just keep leading into the next, and there's always something to build on. And you know, it's kind of fresh in the mind, the next level to try and take everything to. So all is good.
Nice. Yeah, I'm sure. Between the two bands, you're definitely sounds like you've been busy. And I know you guys. I was at the Lock-In Festival. I caught the String Cheese sets there, so I know you guys have been rehearsing all of those, the songs there and the Moon songs from the Phases of the Moon Fest.
Oh, right.
The Cool and the Gang set at Lock-In, and that was pretty cool.
Oh, nice. Very good. Glad you got to check it out. And Phases definitely seemed like a continuation of just feeling like, you know, good run of shows, and that's probably the best example of like, Lock-In felt really great, but Phases even felt like we were able to take another step towards, you know, just feeling good about how everything came out.
Awesome. Well, yeah, good to hear it. So Michael and yourself came together originally in String Cheese Incident, and while both bands, Eodo and String Cheese, are very different, both share a knack for being exploratory in their sound. In String Cheese, you've got your percussion set up, and with Eodo, you've got your kit, laptops, iPads, the vocal headset, and all sorts of gadgetry. Do you kind of welcome that change of pace with each band, you know, doing different things with each? And what's like the biggest benefit of performing with Michael in two totally different bands?
Oh, yeah. Well, on the first part of it about, you know, switching kind of or changing up roles is, it feels like almost sort of a necessity for myself personally, because I really enjoyed doing lots and lots of different things when I wasn't in either band. Just playing with lots of different groups and bouncing between studio sessions all the time, and you know, doing something way different almost on a day-to-day basis. And so when you settle into being in a group, it's kind of like you know, you dive into the music that you're playing, and you get at it at a pretty deep level, because you're always working on that, and you're working on, say, with String Cheese, that configuration with all six of us, and how we go about doing practice, and how we go about approaching songs, and playing live together, and how we feed off each other. So it's really great to be able to then switch it up, and then be like, whoa, this is a whole another thing, you know, all these other parts of the brain get to be used now, and it has a cumulative effect. And also playing a completely different style of music with a different aesthetic to it, as far as, you know, the how you approach it musically. Like, you know, when I play drums with Iyoto, I'm thinking almost more of the way someone would program a drum machine, as far in terms of, you know, maybe the type of pattern that I'll play, but definitely giving it that human feel. So the reference is different. Where when I'm playing percussion and String Cheese, I'm thinking of all this, you know, bubbly, like, or organic thing of like either other percussion players that I really like a lot, or what the particular song needs. And, you know, it tends to be on the, you know, I have all these other artists, say, references, where like when I play with Iyoto, you know, my influences are more like, oh wow, well, these are producers that I really like, and how would my day approach whatever I'm doing right now, and then make it my own, you know? So so it's great, you know, basically, having all the variety of things to do between the two bands. And then doing both of those with Michael is also, has been amazing. While we're doing the looping side of things and improvised music side of things in Iyoto, it's funny that the type of player in what we do in Iyoto seems like it needs to be more towards almost like a drumming mentality, as far as you're thinking of very more distinct patterns to play, and you think of phrasing, and you're thinking of the type of structure, like song structure, like almost the way a drummer normally thinks is like, because we're playing this music and the concentration isn't so much on the solos as it is building all these parts on top of each other. And then when he does, and when he's able to, you know, build parts to free himself to take a solo, then that becomes, you know, like the bonus. And it doesn't have to be, you know, wizardry at that point. It just has to be the right tasteful thing for what we're doing. So I think that helps us being two drummers and having to work with, you know, we have like a click track in our head, so there's some preciseness thing about it that lends itself to you know, to coming off the right way.
Hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I guess, did you guys know each other before you were joined String Cheese some 10 years ago?
Yeah, we had met back in like, I want to say 1996, and at like one of the High Sierra music festivals, and he came over and saw a band that I was playing with, and then afterwards he introduced himself to me and invited me to play some hand drums over by the String Cheese Bussy, and there was another percussionist there, Jared Kaplan, I think he's from Seattle. And we were all just played like the rest of the afternoon, and it was such a good hang, and we exchanged information. I think someone recorded a drum session and put it on,
oh wow,
an album or something. So one of their friends' records with, you know, us sort of drumming in the background. And And then we, you know, we kept in touch about maybe 2 phone calls a year after that. And then when 1999 came around, I sat in with String Cheese once in Los Angeles and once in San Diego. But like there were like 10 other people sitting in at the same time. So I didn't really get to know anybody in the band. And then when 2004 came around, Travis just gave me a call out of the blue saying that, you know, there's a chance that they might be looking for another person to join String Cheese. They don't know, but why don't you come down and sit in when we go through Los Angeles? And that was that whole evolution of how that came about.
Wow. So are you from Los Angeles originally?
I'm originally from Miami. I grew up in North Miami Beach. Yeah. And I ended up right after high school, going into the Navy. And that's what got me out to San Diego and the West Coast. Cause at that time, all my favorite bands were on the West Coast. And I'm like in Miami thinking, no bands ever come down here. They always stop in Georgia or Northern Florida. And, you know, it's another 7-hour drive down to Miami. So I never got to see a whole lot of, you know, the bands that I really liked. So the Navy was like, they're like, we can go to Chicago to be based there. You can go to San Diego to be based there. And this is like, I'd be going in December. So there was just no question. I was like, I'm going to go to San Diego. And, so I ended up doing that right after high school.
Well, it's a beautiful part of the country. Can you give us any examples of some of the bands that you were into at that time?
Well, at that time, being my super rebellious self and just wanting to have my own music, I had been a drummer already. I would play with my dad's band in Miami, and at that time, he was playing he'd do a mix of things. He'd play a lot of Caribbean music, like during the day and in like the early hours, depending on where he was playing. So he'd always have international musicians, you know, come by and sit in. And that was my exposure to like early international music, because I've been playing like reggae and soca music as long as I've been playing rock and roll. And then he'd have other band members join him for like his rock stuff, which would be more like, you know, Police and Crosby, Stills and Nash and Rolling Stones and that kind of a thing. So I liked playing that music. It was great. That's what, you know, what I learned to play. But my friends that I went to school with when I was in high school, we were all into like both a mix of like, say, King Crimson and Yes, but also like the Minutemen and the Meat Puppets and all the SST label guys, like at the time, like before, like Sonic Youth, before they got, you know, popular, and Husker Du. But it was mostly like the Cali bands, like Minutemen and Fishbone and, Meat Puppets and Black Flag. And I was like, wow, those are the bands I wanted to go see, you know? And so when I got out to San Diego, out at San Diego State University, all those bands had come through. And this other band called House of Freaks, which is this amazing duo of just like guitars and drums that would, you know, would put the White Stripes to shame, really. Puts most bands to shame. But, and I would have so much fun after I'd get in off, you know, from some Navy trip, and I'd see what's going on in the paper. And it was like, hell yeah, I'm going to go to, I think the campus club was called like the Back Door or something like that. And there was just always good stuff going on there.
Nice. Yeah. Fishbone. I love those guys. I actually just worked a couple of shows with them on the West Coast earlier
really?
This summer. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was a really cool
season. Nice. And it's funny because their original drummer, I think his last name is Fish too. I think he's brothers with Norwood or something. I'm not 100% sure, but I've done some studio sessions with him. He lives out in Venice Beach. He became Justin Timberlake's drummer for like Justin Timberlake's first tour. And,
wow.
It was kind of a trip to talk to him about it, because they're like in the studio and I had met him, and the guys were saying, yeah, Justin Timberlake's drummer and stuff like that. And we got to talking, and I'm like, wait a minute, you played in Fishbone? He's like, yeah. And I was like, holy crap. And then I fanboyed him for a little bit.
Oh, of course. Well, we all have our folks, you know, we all have the people that we run into, and they're, you know, above the rest, so it's understandable.
Yeah.
Would you say that you, a lot of those bands, would you say that some of those influences kind of pop up during Yodo shows ever?
Yeah, well, there's definitely sometimes, like, when we go to D.C., another group that I liked a lot was Bad Brains. And whenever we go to D.C., there's just a crew of kids that I know there that, you know, I've had these talks about. And if we go there, I'll always drop, like, some Bad Brains lyrics, you know, like Eye Against Eye or something like that. But fit it over, you know, not because we're playing a punk song, but because we're doing something else. And then I'll throw, I don't know, right? Sometimes some lyrics will just come to me depending on what we're playing that, you know, doesn't necessarily fit the style of what it was originally in, but I'm like, screw it, and just drop it. And there'll be four people that talk to me later, like, oh my God, you did that Bad Brains thing. I'm like, yep.
Yeah, I really like those parts of the show where you start saying things like that. I know when I was, the last time I caught you guys at the Fillmore in Denver, there were some aspects of that too.
Yeah.
How did you really get that going? Because I know you're not, it doesn't seem like you're usually singing, but you say some things and it gets looped around through the sounds. How did that kind of come about?
Yeah, well, at this point, I don't really loop it anymore. I used to loop my voice a little bit more, but then I was able to, I got this harmonizer that I use live that can harmonize my voice, so I don't have to like stack a sort of chorus together like I used to. I can just hit a button, all of a sudden there's two other people singing in harmony with me.
Wow.
And I can do more things on the fly like that. And I just want, at least what I'm doing, like Travis does, I mean, his whole gig is like looping and sagging things. And from my side of things, I wanted to be like not loop anything, and just like everything that I was doing was just like, okay, I'm turning this knob and I'm still playing drums, and now, you know, I'm affecting my voice in this way. So it was just kind of something that I felt like I started having more fun doing instead of keeping track of what loops are on, you know, are on which channels. And what was the other thing you just, how did it come about with the singing? Well, that was kind of funny because it was just about everything in EO has been accidental how stuff came about. But we did a gig, I think it was in, I think it was in Breckenridge at the 320 South Club. Our crew guy actually forgot my electronic pad. I used to have this electronic drum pad that I use for Yodo, and actually I'd play parts on there, and I would loop those parts and like stack up like electronic drum parts that I'd be playing along with. And that was a lot of fun, but he forgot it one time, and it was right at the start of tour. And man, that's my whole gig that's gone. And I was like, you know, this is the start of tour. I really need it, you know, for the rest of the tour. And he's like, okay, we'll work it out. Either he'll get it or, you know, try to get somebody to drive it out to us. So he ended up having to go get it, which meant that he wasn't going to be back for the show. And I was like, well, what could I do? Different and stuff, and I'm like, oh, I'll just sing like drum parts or with my mouth and stuff. And so I still had it, you know, set up to loop that. So I'd loop drum parts, you know, like I'd do hand claps, like, you know, something like that. And I, you know, that's it was the sort of start of it. And it was like, oh, that was fun. And when we talked, it was like, oh, you should do more of that. And then so I started putting like little eeks and ahs and making other weird alien noises with my voice in addition to that. And then one time it was like, oh, I'll just, I didn't know what the first thing I actually sung was, but, you know, it all of a sudden got some really good feedback from people that were checking it out. And then I started going kind of a little more, into it like that. And it's funny because I used to, when I was first learning drums, I was kind of, I was rapping at the same time. So I used to sit in with my dad and play drums and do like a rap at the same time for if he would do some funk song, some Rick James song or something like that. And so, you know, there was just a whole part, a little chunk of stuff that I used to do when I was a kid that I just stopped doing. And this, you know, this was sort of a thing that like opened the door for it to be able to, you know, have those other things sneak back in. And so particularly with the rapping thing, I was just kind of treating it as another drum because it was such a cool layer, you know, to be able to dive into like a Busta Rhymes rap that's so rhythmic, you know, and challenging to work on. But I'd get off on it just as much as like if I'm playing, when you play tabla, like drums from India, you learn how to play the drum, but the way you learn how to play the drum is you learn how to say the syllables of the drum. So you go takana, takana, takata, tatikata, tikata, tikata, tikata. You do all the, like anything that you do on the drum, you have to be able to do with your voice. So, and huh. So then it became like, wow, I can like practice at the same time. So just, you know, there were so many things about it that became more appealing. And then especially, you know, getting the crowd feedback that it was a lot more encouraging to dive deeper into it.
Oh, it sounds like it's kind of a cool natural progression then.
Yeah. There's so many things that we've done in Yoda where it has come out of an accident or another piece of gear breaking. It's like, damn it, that was our key piece of gear, you know, on Travis's end of thing. But it would be like, oh, well, we got through it, and then we found this whole other approach thing to do, sort of because it forced us to do that. And so that's been a nice part about, you know, dealing with electronic gear and having it, you know, break down on you and adapting in the moment.
That's cool. I like, it's nice hearing some of the background on some of this stuff. I know you can, there's videos, you know, on YouTube and on the website about you guys, detailing all the gear you have on stage, and there's videos of you guys going to Apple stores to give demonstrations on, you know, how iPads and MacBooks can play a part in your sound. Are there any new toys, anything new you have going on for this coming tour that you'll be using?
Let's see. For me in particular, not so much. There's still so much plenty to do within the set of what I already have and tricks to do with the software. But I think it's basically on my end of things, just like hankering down with the stuff that I already have to do and trying to be do a little more like making up melodies with my voice and doing some other things like in that regard so that there's you know that I feel like I'm getting better just like on the fly making up melodies and then after I've done that, you know, just kind of knowing what that is and moving on to doing something more creative with it, either giving it like a Middle Eastern flair to my voice or putting a, like a wash of reverb on it, similar to like the band Apparat. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're a great more like down tempo group, but the guy actually loops his voice live. But then he gives it this wash that is just like really hypnotizing and stuff. So there's definitely some things in there to try and see what works. And on Travis's end of things, I know his setup has changed quite a bit. He seems to like interchange like keyboards in and out, and now he's got he's got two double keyboard setups in his rig, and I don't know exactly what's going on over there, but I know all of a sudden I was like, oh, that's a different keyboard than last time, and you know, which is good because it can't help but like change up sonically what we're doing too.
Cool. Kind of going with that, one of my next questions was basically touching on how you guys are creating something new every night, every show, and how that kind of separates you from the pack, the whole improvising aspect. And I was going to ask you if, you know, if you ever get tired of trying to create something new every night, or if it, you know, if any of the emotions going through your head on any given day can factor into what you're doing each night. But it also sounds like just exploring the gear alone and all of the different stuff you have in front of you can help in that regard as well.
Oh yeah, there's such a, I would say both of us are of the ADD natural mindset, where it's like, you know, keeping things interesting is like always sort of that search for both of us. And I think something that happens with playing all live improvised music is you can't help but like have your, you know, I mean, you can never really, not relax, but there's always the next thing we have to move to, because treating the set, you know, in the way that a DJ treats the set means like, every 3 minutes or so, you got to move on to either, well, for a DJ, it would be a new song, or for us, it would be a new texture or song. Well, some, we don't have songs, but, you know, every 3 minutes, we treat those areas like songs. And within those songs, there's going to be an a verse section, a chorus section, and a breakdown section, and, you know, other things that have to happen. So we'll create all these sections, you know, within like a little 3 minute period. And by the time that's up, you know, and then there's a solo in there or something else. And then we move on to the next. So there's not really time to think about, not necessarily like, oh, how's the day going today? And,
right.
You know, what kind of mood you're in. I accept the fact that, we totally feed off the energy of the people too. So, you know, if we hit some certain thing that, you know, we're kind of going through our emotions, but all of a sudden it feels like it's, well, this is particularly resonating with the people, then we'll like hang out there for, you know, for a while till we feel like we've got everyone on board, and then we could take them on our own journey to wherever we're going. And, so yeah, we don't seem to ever run out of, things to do. There's some things that we'll get into, like habits-wise, that it's like, oh, okay, well, if we're going to set up and go into this particular kind of feel, that something else happens that we do in a similar way. But usually, after you do that for 2 or 3 weeks, then, you just get tired of doing it yourself, and you just sort of recognize it. I say the one downfall is that it doesn't contribute to like retaining memory of anything because, you know, you get used to like, did that move on, did that move on, did that move on. And then I'm like, where are my keys at? And I'm like, I don't know. That happened a long time ago. And you know, so there's some basic memories that are, you know, you get used to being in that mind of like, move on, going forward, next thing, you know, and I find myself, if I'm not in the habit of, you know, doing things like I know exactly where I put my keys at the beginning of the set, or my wallet or something like that, or my phone.
Right.
And those seem to be the harder parts, actually.
Hmm.
You're like, nah, you're weird.
No, not at all. I feel you there, honestly. I wanted to touch on, I know for the Outer Orbit is what the tour is being called. I've read that there's also going to be some upgrades, which is hard to believe, to the light and overall production. You guys have been known over the years to have, you know, the Lotus Flower, visual mapping, all sorts of cool stuff going on, to a point where it almost, to where it becomes a part of the show. You know, a lot of people consider light to be an accompaniment to the music, as not so much as, you know, on par. But with you guys, there's just so much going on visually as well that it really just becomes a part of the show and experience. Is there anything you can tell us about what you guys have coming up?
Well, it looks like we're going to have, for the entire tour, we'll have our projection mapping, our guy Devin that does that, who is also part of our Lotus setup. And we're going to be having our laser guy, Hunter, on tour with us. And he's been doing stuff with us on and off for the last few years. And he's always, great and super creative with how he goes about doing lasers, and which is one of the reasons why we wanted him in particular to do it, just because he totally gets what we're doing, and he loves doing his thing on the fly the way that we're doing it. And he's open, like, creatively to just trying some different things. So, for instance, we were in Springfield, Illinois, doing a show, and he's, like, setting up his lasers and checking out the sight lines and everything like that. And we had some of our objects that Devin maps onto. And, we were standing together and it's like, oh, what, you think you could trace that object that Devin has over there with his laser? And he's like, oh yeah, I could do that. And we started playing around with that. And he's like, oh, do you think you could take that TIE fighter that you usually have blowing up somewhere? You think you could put in that, you know, that little zone? Like, so we started coming up with this method of mapping out lasers, on the fly, which are, they're not done. I mean, we tried to look online and it's like, who else is mapping out lasers, for the show? And it's just like this thing that hasn't happened yet. And so we started diving into that and all of a sudden it added this whole other dimension that, you know, people would remark about. God, I haven't seen, you know, that type of visual information at a show. So the fact that he's just psyched to do, you know, whatever, and he's got these amazing, like, in the nerdy ways, like 60,000 points per second lasers on the road with us, that can allow him to do a lot of things that your normal laser show can't do, and he's psyched to bring it all out on the road. It makes it fun to you know, dig in creatively and artistically all the way around, so, you know, in the same way that we do it musically. So that hopefully any point in time, if people are looking around or they're, you know, opening their eyes or taking a break from dancing or whatever, or enjoying the whole thing, that there'll be something aesthetically pleasing or something aesthetically invigorating going on for them at our show.
Oh, well, I definitely think there always has been. The last couple shows I've seen, I know I was blown away by everything that was going on, so... That's why, as I was mentioned earlier, it's pretty cool to see what you guys have in store coming up. And I'll be tapping the Denver show. I believe it's the last show of the tour.
Yeah.
I would assume you probably spend a good amount of time in Colorado with the String Cheese Gang and everything. Is Denver one of the... Do you feel like more of a response in Denver and around Colorado than... other parts of the country or other parts of the tour you'll be on?
Well, Denver in general seems like there's sort of a ground zero for, I think everyone that comes through tends to have, you know, kind of like their biggest audiences, you know, no matter where else they're playing, you know, besides maybe their hometown or bigger than their hometown. And that's been the same for us. And, we String Cheese practices out in Colorado, and four of the six of us live out in Colorado, and so we spend a bunch of time practicing there, having meetings with management, and doing shows there as well. So it's you know, I would definitely argue that between the Denver, Boulder, just Colorado music scene in general might be the best scene in the country, and kind of easily too. I mean, I live here in Los Angeles, but it's kind of like in Los Angeles, you have lots of different scenes that are so unconnected, and you know, they're kind of popping off in their own world, but you don't have this general sense of like, you know, everybody when you go to a show and stuff. And whenever I go out in Colorado, it's kind of like you just see a lot of either similar people, or you run into people that it takes less than a 5-minute conversation to, you know, to know someone from the crew or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very like, connected. And,
Absolutely.
So yeah, to play for a Denver crowd and get them off is just like, it's particularly, pleasing, because they give that energy right back to you. And there's so many people that move to Colorado like just for the music scene, you know, so they're already amped like that, and then they see so much, you got to do something outstanding to grab them, but when you grab them, then it's like, wow, you know, multiple rewards back to you for the effort.
Oh, yeah. Well, it makes me glad to live here now. I was definitely one of those people who moved out here for a combination of music and snowboarding and everything else. So
yeah.
I'm right yeah, there with the rest of them.
Nice. That's awesome.
Well, cool. Well, kind of wrapping up, I know I wanted to just go in for a moment. You guys really, I know you had a studio album, I think it was 2009 that you released it, but obviously the live shows are, you know, the meat and potatoes of everything you guys do. And I was noticing how you release most of the live shows for sale afterwards, you know, kind of allowing people to take that experience home with them and relive it in any which way they want. Do you guys plan to just continue in doing that in the near future? And does it really even make sense to you to go into the studio to record anything?
Yeah, any other world, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. And yeah, let's just say the studio experience for us is almost the exact same thing as a live show, except that, you know, we're in a Yoda world, we're not purposely doing anything, we're just kind of free-flowing, but when we get in the studio, it's kind of, we'll free-flow on, like, the same thing for, say, like, about 12 minutes, and then we'll take the best 6 minutes of that is, and then we'll go back and, since we've got it all recorded on individual tracks, we'll go back and adjust some things so certain sounds aren't jumping out, and, you know, try to make it a little bit more pristine and like less noisy if there's random noises that don't fit well with what we're doing. So we did that for 3 albums, and right now it just doesn't make sense to do that again. That part doesn't feel, you know, that inspiring. Although we're really proud of those 3 records. So we've talked about it for the last 2 years, and the next thing that we have to do that would seem, you know, more fun is to, say, like, set up wherever we're playing at and record a show, but record it, with all the individual tracks. Like right now when we record our shows, they're bounced down to just a stereo track, and then we master that stereo track, and that's what gets put on live downloads. But the thing to do would be to have all the tracks actively recorded, so we have the stems from all those tracks, and to give those to DJs or do contests where people can remix our stuff with individual stems or tracks. And, you know, and then see where that goes, put something out like that. Cause, it just feels like that would be the next thing is to have a great collaboration and see what people do with our stuff.
Cool. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that and, you know, everything else that comes along, including, this upcoming tour and especially the Denver show.
Nice. Thanks. Yeah. Super excited. I think we're back at the Ogden Theater for that.
That's right.
And we're just going to make a ruckus.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure it'll be crazy as usual.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I mean, that's pretty much what I have right now. I mean, thank you so much for taking all this time to talk to me.
Yeah. Thanks for putting the word out on it, too. You can't... thank you enough for getting the word out.
Absolutely, yeah. So good luck with the tour and everything else, and we'll be catching you when you get here to Colorado.
Right on, you know it. And you have my number, too, so if you're at the show or whatever, give a ring and we'll grab a drink or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good.
Right on, John. All right, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Yeah, thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.